And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Well, can you believe it? 9 days. Oh, 11 days. I got my time wrong. 12 days. I'm thinking 2 weeks minus two, and I added two. All right, 12 days. That's still not very long. 12 days until November 4th. Barack Obama, of course, is suspending his campaigning. He's going to Hawaii to visit his grandmother, which I think is clearly the right thing to do. And it also, I mean, this is the woman who helped raise him. You know, his he never knew his father. His mother died fairly young, and while his mom was in Indonesia, his grandparents were raising him. So obviously there's a very close connection there, and I appreciate that he's doing the right thing. It's a terrible time, but of course no one can plan such things. In any case, it is 12 days away. You know, I'd be happier if it were over and I was already celebrating. Boy, will I be celebrating. And I got to say, many of you know that I report from Washington, D.C., but I live just across the river in Virginia. The part of the Virginia that is a suburb of Washington, D.C., and therefore is, according to McCain campaign advisor Nancy Pfotenhauer, is not part of the real Virginia. According to John McCain's brother, it is part of communist Virginia. Basically, if you do not support the Republicans, you are either a communist or you're fake. Well, you know, I'm glad to say that doesn't play too well in Northern Virginia, which is one-third of the state's population. And I have to admit, we in Nova are rapidly turning our state from red to purple to a light shade of blue. When I first moved here, we had a Republican governor, two Republican senators, and Republican houses, state houses, both the Senate and the Assembly. Now I'm proud to say that one by one, we have a Democratic governor. We have one Democratic senator and a next one to be sure. It's the one thing that I'm absolutely sure of, for far more than even the electing Obama, that Mark Warner, our former governor, will be our next Democratic senator, along with Jim Webb. We'll have two Democratic senators, a Democratic governor. We already have taken over the Senate of Virginia. And, in just a couple years, I think we'll take over the Assembly as well. I'm proud to say we're turning my state red to blue. And once Virginia comes in, and we're one of the earliest states to close, being on the East Coast and being one of the prime states, Ohio and Florida are also in the Eastern time zone, but I think they close an hour later. In any case, if Virginia goes for Obama, and I think we will, I really do, you know, you could start celebrating. And then Ohio and Florida would just be the kickers, and then I'm not really worried about the rest of the country. Really, we only need one of those states. Two would make me feel better. But if all we really need is Virginia. And so, yeah, I'm getting excited. I'm getting still a little nervous. I know how silly it is to be complacent. In fact, one of the things I'm going to be doing next week is I'm going to a voter protection training seminar. I do this every year. This isn't just something I do for presidential campaigns. Every single year on Election Day, I go out as a lawyer and protect people's right to vote. That means if somebody comes in and they tell the person they can't vote, I make sure that their vote is counted any way I can. Sometimes that means I drive voters to the right precinct because they show up in the wrong one. Sometimes it means that I insist that the person fill out a provisional ballot, even when they're turned away from the registrar because their name isn't in the machine right. Sometimes it just means that when someone's told they don't have a right to vote, I argue with the registrar because I see that that person does have a right to vote. Maybe her name is Elizabeth and she registered as Betsy. These things do happen. Bob Kincaid points out that what about North Carolina? They have two more electoral votes than the Old Dominion. That is true. North Carolina has two more electoral votes than Virginia. But I got to say, if we win North Carolina, then you might as well break out the champagne. Because North Carolina is a harder win than Virginia. I think we can win North Carolina. I really do. And that would be really exciting because I think North Carolina, if you look at the polls, Obama's up by maybe 1 or 2%, where he's up by a good 5 or 6 in Virginia. So I guess the thing is, if he wins North Carolina, I'm certain he's winning Virginia. If he wins Virginia, I'm not so sure about North Carolina. But that would be terrific. Listen, I want to see us win all the swing states. And I think it's quite possible. Florida, Ohio, Colorado, Missouri. Missouri would be cool. And then we'd get to be the fun ones. I mean, if we actually won the next tier of states, Indiana, or Bob's home state of West Virginia, that would be exciting. You know, I think we have a chance in Montana and North Dakota, but none of those are really necessary to make Obama president. Those are necessary to make clear to the country that he has a mandate. So they're very important. They're a way of saying to the rest of the country that the country resoundingly rejected 8 years of dark Republican rule. So don't get me wrong. I'd love to see North Carolina. North Carolina is also important because there's a Senate seat, unlike the Senate seat in Virginia, where I'm sure the Democrat will win. Whether or not Kate Hagan beats Elizabeth Dole, well, that's a little more up in the air. And interestingly, some of the same forces that are fighting the equality, marriage equality for gay people in California are fighting Kate Hagan in North Carolina. They're putting out ads saying that, you know, she supports the right of gay people to be married, so, you know, she's an evil, nasty, anti-God human being. And what's interesting to me is I'm almost, well, I'm not almost, I am. I'm more nervous about the vote in California now than I am about Obama being president. Now, clearly, Obama being president is the bigger, more important thing. But I think that's going to happen, barring some national emergency. Again, don't be complacent. Don't stop what you're doing, please. I heard in Pennsylvania that some of the Obama volunteers have been going home because they're so certain they're going to win. That's a silly thing to do. You know, when you're running a very, very long race, a marathon, an eight-year marathon, even though you're ahead at the end, keep sprinting. It's just 12 more days. Everyone needs to keep doing what they're doing to get Obama elected. But California concerns me because the no vote, the vote to preserve gay, the right of gay people to marry, and to be clear, gay people have that right now, and the right wing is trying to overturn it with the California Constitutional Amendment. The no vote was winning substantially. Young people and even, you know, folks in their 40s in California, maybe even in their 50s, support the right of gay people to be have the same rights as everybody else. But that's overall. And young people may come out to vote, or they may not. You know, I've been reading a poll, and it showed that only 66% of newly registered voters, most of whom are young people, vote this year. Now, that's higher than before, but it's still a good deal lower than the 85% or so of people over 65. So what's up, young people? I mean, if you don't vote this election, you'll never be trusted again. I guess you won't be young anymore. But this is the election to show your power. And there's no excuse for not voting. None. Zero. Zilch. I don't care what's going on in your life. I don't care what's happening. You know, you got your parents on the deathbed? Maybe. But even then, you should get an absentee vote. You know? Why? There is no excuse. No excuse for not voting. And that includes you Nader supporters and McKinney supporters. As far as I'm concerned, you're just as bad as the people that don't vote. Actually, you're worse because you're going all the way to the election booth, and then you're throwing your vote away when you could vote for Obama, particularly if you live in a swing state. I guess I can't get after you if you're a Nader voter in D.C., but many, many states have early voting. Some have already voted. So far, the early voting is good, by the way. It's in Obama's favor, but the absentee voting isn't, I guess because older voters are more likely to vote absentee. So there is no excuse for not voting. I don't want to hear it. If you can call in now to tell me why you're not voting, what you can do is instead go and whatever your excuse is on Election Day, get yourself an absentee ballot. There is no excuse. But the right wing is pulling out their campaign, as I said, in California, and that one concerns me because I was already crowing, and I admit that's the problem with complacency. I was already crowing that the Californians supporting equality were up 10 points, and they were, over those that were opposed to it. Now the polls have tightened. There's even one poll showing the opponents of equality pulling ahead. And they're pulling ahead largely through massive, theocratic, church-based appeals. Well, I'll post one on my website sent to me by Bob Kincaid, where they basically say, you know, God insists that you save gays by treating them as second-class citizens. Okay, they don't say second-class citizens, but we know what they want. And the Mormon Church is funneling all the money they have virtually everything they've got, throwing it at California. And let's face it, people who are in favor of marriage equality are being outspent 2-1. If you've got a little extra money, and I know the horn needs it, so give it to the horn, but if you've got a little bit more, please go and fund the No on 8 campaign in California. I've given them some money. I don't live in California. Because this election is so important to the issue of equality for a generation to come. If California, if we win 51-49, then it will be seen as the end of this hatred and bigotry and votes where people say that, if you don't want to talk about the economy, just bring up God, gays, and guns. Right? I mean, the Republicans have used these wedge issues to divide us. They used it much more in 04 than today. If California votes the right way, votes to keep marriage equality for its citizens, then I think we will see the death knell to the religious right movement. They'll pop up again and they'll do angry things again. But I think at that point, after that, everything they try to do, abortion, making sure that punishing young women for getting birth control, all of that, they'll be sort of laughed at. Well, you couldn't stop the largest state in the United States from having gay people marry. So, maybe God isn't on your side. But if 2% switch because you or I didn't give enough money to the cause or didn't call our friends in California who we know who might vote the other way or might not vote, maybe we have a friend attending college there, some young person, 20 years old, who may not get around to voting because Obama's going to win California. You call that person, you tell them how vital it is. Because this is an issue beyond gay rights. It's an issue of fundamental fairness for American citizens. It's an issue of whether or not you want the United States of America to be a theocracy or not. Because if the religious right wins this one by 2 points, and we all know the difference between 51-49 and 49-51 is, 1% of Californians who decided to, not work out that day and actually stand in line at the polls, is the difference between the future of America. Are we moving forward or is it a huge setback? I'm not worried about Obama in California, but I am very much worried about this amendment. And I have to say part of the reason I'm worried is because some of our allies, African Americans, Latinos, I'll say it, who support the Democrats, support Obama, support many progressive ideals on economics, do not support equal rights for gay people. Many of them don't support a woman's right to control her body either. Some of it's for Catholic Latinos. Some of it's because this is something that Kevin from Brooklyn and I were talking about, I think just yesterday, maybe it was the day before, in detail, because there's a lot of conservative African-American churches. There are a lot of churches out there in the African-American community that aren't liberal, that aren't tolerant, that aren't the religious sensibility that I support. And this is where Bob and I were arguing yesterday, because I'm more than willing to call the homophobic, intolerant, churches the cruel, awful, disgusting institutions they are. I'm just not willing to throw all religion out with the bathwater. There are good liberal churches, synagogues, mosques around. They exist. But let's face it, a lot of African-American churches don't fall in that category. And I think that black folk coming out proudly to support Obama, it would be a terrible irony and it would be a grand insult to Martin Luther King, who, by the way, supported gay rights long before anybody supported such things. I mean, in the 1960s, being gay was a crime. And, he would allow, for example, openly gay speakers to speak at the Civil Rights March, which was unheard of in the 60s. Martin Luther King was before his time in lots of ways. But he would be turning over in his grave if African Americans voting for the first black president, half black president of the United States, were to, at that same moment, turn the clock back and deny equal rights under the law to gay people. So in his memory, in his honor, is another reason why people need to get out there and help No on 8 in California. And that may include calling some of your friends and family. I don't mean to pick on only African Americans, of course. Latinos, whites, you name it. You name it. I used to live in Los Angeles. It's been a few years back. In fact, I'm proud to say that I wrote the very first civil unions bill in the state of California. Back at a time when it's just 10 years ago, when separate but equal was the best we could hope for. Well, we've moved farther than that now, and this would be, I think, the nail in the religious right coffin. This is a very important election. They're absolutely right about that. It is very important. It's the kind of election that can determine the future, not just of California, but of freedom and equality in America for years to come. Now, if it's a setback, well, you know, we won't. There are setbacks in the civil rights movement. But if we win, and we should win, and we particularly should win in a state like California, I think at that point, that plus the Obama election will say to the religious right, sorry, people aren't buying your Kool-Aid. Teach whatever you want in the churches, but leave us alone. Stop using the law as a weapon to be intolerant against your fellow citizens. That, my friends, is just like the Taliban. It's just as evil. It's just as wrong. So I want to remind you, it's not just a national race going on, but the race in California is going on as well. Bob is telling me that what I just had to say right now picks up somewhere from where we were going last night. I hope you heard last night's conversation that Bob and I had, because I think it's a very interesting point of view. I don't think we differ as much. I mean, I think we're fighting over smaller things rather than bigger things. But I want to invite him back on to continue that discussion. I'll say this in my defense. To be absolutely clear, I am not in any way defending, in any way, shape, or form, the intolerant churches, the churches that want to use the law to beat everyone on the head with a stick, whether it be gay rights or Sunday blue laws or abortion or prayer in schools, you name it. Obviously, I'm against all of that. My argument with Bob is that to leave the little people, particularly the liberal churches, alone. I guess I'm trying to get Bob to admit that there are such things as good liberal churches, people like Jim Wallace, who are doing good things. Martin Luther King was a pastor. So I'm going to defend not all religion by any stretch, but that those aspects of religion, those Christians, Jews, and Muslims who are working to promote a more tolerant universe that we live in. But Bob, go right ahead.
Now, Mark, I have never said that all churches or all Christians are bad or anything. I have doctrinal problems with them. I mean, for the most part, the American Episcopal Church, the part that hasn't been sucked up in right-wing the dogma and homophobia and chasing off after that African bishop, I'm fine by them. The United Churches of Christ, of which Trinity, that Obama attended, fine by me. Inclusive, you know, I got dogmatic issues with.
No, I'm not saying you have to agree with their.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I got doctrinal, doctrinal issues with nutty stuff like, you know, zombie gods and virgin births and crackers turning into meat.
I think that's just the Catholics that believe that. The Protestants, it's symbolic, right?
Well, yeah. But no, where I said this dovetails into what we were talking about last night, you know, you just enunciated, you said, but we, you know, the individual small guy participants, we got to leave them out of it.
Well, let me be clear, because I'm afraid last night, and we had to sort of end it because the time came and I had to go. I want to make my position absolutely clear. I am not defending the small guys who are contributing to Kenneth Copeland or to Jerry Falwell, or to, a lot of the Mormon church that's sending money to. What I'm not doing, though, is insisting that all religion and all religious institutions do bad things, because many of them do good things. And I guess I feel that despite my problems with the Catholic Church, and I've got a number of them, I'm not going to attack the 80-year-old lady who's going to the Catholic Church and you know, with her rosary beads. The Mormon Church, I got a bit more of a problem with. I think they do more.
But that's what I'm trying to point out, Mark. You're trying to establish some sort of a sliding scale here that absolves sure. some people for responsibility, and condemns others for theirs.
I think a sliding scale is a better way to put it. I'm not so much absolving and condemning as meting out absolution or condemnation. I think it is a sliding scale.
Well, okay, let's take your imaginary little old 80-year-old lady shuffling off with her beads to Mass every week.
Okay.
Her contributions over the years have clearly probably contributed to feeding the hungry. The Catholic Charities are very, very good and very, very noble in terms of giving poor people enough food to eat to survive and come back to church next week.
They're very good about that. They also build expensive churches with a lot of their money, too. So that goes to very pretty buildings that don't really help feed the poor. But no question the Catholic Church has, and I think it's largely better than most Protestant churches, frankly.
But that money also props up a doctrine that is helping to murder the African continent.
Because of being against birth control and spreading
AIDS. Right, because African men can't be trusted to use a condom, and they got to raise lots more little poor peasant children to come to Mother Church.
But can't we kind of weigh it? I mean, I don't know how much money they're spending in Africa to stop birth control versus how much money they're spending to stop
poverty.
They
don't have to spend any money in Africa to stop birth control. They have tickets out of hell and into heaven, Mark, and that's better than any money. And that is directly, psychologically, psychically, spiritually, physically supported by that little old 80-year-old lady telling her beads.
I'm silent because, I mean, I hear you. I hear what you're saying. I'm not disagreeing with you. But maybe it's a pick your battles kind of thing.
Well, now, look at the Proposition 8 issue that you raised. That's why I sent this to you, because it picks up where we were last night.
Okay.
There is reference in that story to let me find it again. I want to get the quote right. There's reference in that.
Maybe you could play that commercial on the air, the one you sent me.
Well, yeah, we can. But there's reference in that commercial to a family in Folsom, California, who are bankrupting themselves to keep the gays from getting married and destroying their families.
Yeah, that's pretty disgusting.
They have pulled
and
they
sad. Have, and I actually feel sorry for them in the same way that even though I fear them, I also feel sorry for members of the Ku Klux Klan. You can fear someone and feel sorry for them at the same time. I mean, I think a lot of the rednecks that continue to wear the white robes, while extremely dangerous and have to be stopped, are pitiable people because they, you know, most of them are uneducated and have no way of achieving anything economically, and they use their bigotry as their last hope, which, you know, I got to say, at least a drug user is only killing themselves. The bigot's killing others, so it's not
they
want to stop them, but I do pity them at the same time.
Here's the quote from the Sacramento Bee. Pam and Rick Patterson have always followed teachings of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and tried to live within their means. You know, that LDS does preach frugality because if an LDS family's frugal, that means they got more to give to the church.
10%.
He drives a 10-year-old Honda Civic to his job at Intel. She's a stay-at-home mom who makes most of the family meals and bakes her own bread. You know, how can you argue with that? Salt of the earth.
Sarah Palin's kind of people.
You know, common, Cleavon Little in, or no, no, it was Gene Wilder. In Blazing Saddles, described as the common clay of the New West. You know, morons.
Really?
She's bakes her own bread. The couple who have 5 sons between the ages of 3 and 12.
Only 5? It's a small Mormon family.
Well, apparently it's kind of hit and miss for the Pattersons. It is a small Mormon family. They live in a comfortable but modest 3-bedroom home in Folsom. It's a traditional lifestyle, whatever the heck that means. It's like what Peter Godbold used to say, normal is only a setting on a dryer. it's a traditional lifestyle. You know, I don't know, maybe he goes out and makes his own bow and arrows and they have fried rabbit for dinner that he shoots in the woods.
That only happens in Wasilla, Bob.
Well, that's moose. It's a traditional lifestyle they believe is now at risk. Well, why do they believe that? That's the thing about journalism. That's, you know, it's the thing about learning critical analysis and critical reading. I mean, here's a story. This isn't out of the National Enquirer. This is out of the Sacramento Bee that they believe is now at risk. And that's journalism.
Yeah, they never ever explain why if 2 gay people love each other in San Francisco. Somehow, he going to lose his job at Intel, or I don't know, one of his boys will turn gay?
It's a hateful tautology. But, okay, so then it says, that's why the Petersons recently made a huge financial sacrifice. They withdrew $50,000 from their savings and donated it to the Yes on Proposition 8 campaign.
Oh, my God.
They got five you boys between 3 and 12.
I hope it actually does affect their lives. I got to say, I hope they're foreclosed upon, and maybe in their poverty, the five boys will learn that hate has a price. I mean, you know.
Well, and that's why I keep saying actions have consequences. You don't just idly go to church. You don't just idly go to synagogue. You don't just idly go to the mosque.
Well, but this is different. These are people who are spending $50,000 of their own money to promote hate.
Who told them to? Who has begged and beaten on them and browbeaten and cajoled and harangued them?
The Mormon Church.
And guess what? It's not just the Mormons.
It's mostly them in California. They're by far the biggest supporters.
Well, I hate to tell you
there
this.
Are other churches.
I hate to tell you this, but the American Family Association, which is headed by an ordained Methodist minister by the name of Donald Wildman, a Methodist mark.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
They just pulled 500 large out of their kitty that had been sent to them from little old ladies and little old men and the ignorant fundies and mom and pops.
The
and they sent it to the Prop 8 campaign.
Okay, but here's the thing. I think there's an ongoing struggle in many churches. The most famous, of course, is the Episcopal because they do it more out in the open than others. But I think that most churches, even, yes, the Catholic Church, I don't think it's affected the Mormons yet, but there is this ongoing struggle to make their churches or mosques or synagogues more tolerant, more liberal. And, I mean, I know it's going on in my faith. I mean, you know, reform has already gone there. The conservative movement in Judaism would not be considered very conservative by conservative liberal standards. They conserve a tradition, but we don't read. We don't even read in our Bible the extreme passages of the Bible that we don't like. And even the Orthodox movement they're being pushed. The modern Orthodox movement is coming around, even on gay issues. Now they're a lot slower. I know that in the Catholic Church, people are pushing. In Muslims, there are liberal Muslims groups that are pushing back. I want to encourage the liberal Christians. Rather than tell them to quit their church, I want to help them transform their church. Is that fair?
I suppose it is, but what's the point?
Well, because I think we can have churches that do good things. We can have Jim Wallace-type churches out there.
I don't think we have to throw away
Jesus and the virgin birth to get tolerance. I mean, even though I don't support Jesus and the virgin birth, but others
I'd
rather not attack their God, I'd rather attack their principles.
But I think the operative model, Mark, is more to be seen in the LDS church, and that is that when someone comes along and questions doctrine, they leave the faith.
Well, it depends on the church. The Mormons.
No, that's what I said. In the Mormons, that's the model.
Yes, you're right.
I'll tell you that's the model in the Southern Baptist church, too. It's the model in Pentecostalism. When the light goes on, you move on.
Well, I won't defend any of those churches. I won't.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. You're making this sliding scale value judgment on what's valid and what's not. I think that's laudable of you. But I also think that it's simple of you.
Well, you know, Bob, look, I think that we have to reach out and make common cause with people who often disagree with us. It depends how far they go. You know, when you start advocating murder, you know, no, I'm not going to make common cause with you on the environment. Sorry, I don't care if you care about the environment, you know. So there is a sliding scale. I mean,
there are Klansmen out there holding up Obama signs.
Right. I'm not going to be with them either. But even someone who's homophobic, okay, and that affects me personally, even someone who is against the right of gay people to marry, I guess I feel like if I work with that person to stop global warming, say, or to, you know, to help give soup to poor people, that maybe if that person gets to know me and gets to see that, you know, not all gay people wear leather strap-ons and march naked in the streets of San Francisco, but most of them are good people, you know, bad people.
I'm not saying that the people who put the march with the leather strap-ons are bad ones.
I'm not either, but I'm, but most gay people don't. And my point is that if we can show the intolerant that there are good gay people around, then lo and behold, they might not be so intolerant. It's like desegregation, if you will. I'm willing to talk to and act with people who have values I find abhorrent, although I admit there's a limit. I mean, it can go to, I'm not going to work with the Klansman, period. I mean, that's clear. But with many who have values that I still consider abhorrent, like if they don't want equal rights for gay people, I guess I feel, and I've done this in my life, Bob, I have worked with such people, and I have persuaded such people over time. It's not the kind of thing you can do in a five-minute conversation. But if you work with someone month in, day out, on something else, yes, you can open them up, and yes, you can talk to people, and yes, their minds do change on occasion. And I guess it's more of a tactic rather than a strategy or whatever. I mean, it's not that I support what they're doing. It's that I think that most people, even the super religious, most people are salvageable. Now, some aren't, but most.
And, that's part of my argument. You know, a church doesn't make you good. A good person makes a good church.
I'll accept that.
So, you know, if you pack your bags and you.
I'll even go further. I'll also accept that some churches do encourage good behavior.
I'd just as soon see people leave these faiths, these people who have seen the light, leave these faiths and swell the ranks of the Unitarian Universalist. Because, you know, the neat thing about the Unitarian Church is you can go there and you can believe that babies get born from little raped teenage girls, and when you eat crackers, it turns into human cannibal flesh in your belly, and wine turns into blood. And
you're a little biased, Bob.
You can believe all that crazy crap, and the Unitarians will say, good on you. So, you know, I mean, that's just me. But there's a point that is buried in this $50,000 donation that was harangued and cajoled out of Pam and Rick Patterson, Mark. And that is that these people, by virtue of the faiths in which they participate, are swamped. They are absolutely awash in just mind-numbing fear day in and day out. Because, for instance, you realize, Mark Levine, that you don't get up every morning and decide on your sexuality. And neither do I.
And
nobody had any choice. But these people apparently have to get up every morning and decide whether or not they're going to go trolling in the gay crowd.
Okay, Bob.
They're afraid of their own sexuality.
Bob, I agree with everything you've just said. Okay, so that's the problem. We're not disagreeing on the problem. The problem is out there. Now, the question is, how do you transform? One of the things I like about Barack Obama is that this is a guy willing to talk to people whom he strongly disagrees with, whether it be the leaders of Iran or whether it be Tom Coburn, senator from Oklahoma, who, you know, the radical anti-abortion right-wing wacko. Okay. He's even willing to work with Tom Coburn on a spending bill that was actually a very good bill. It was one that said whatever Congress spends, it will be open and on the Internet and everyone gets to see it. So I agree with Tom Coburn on that one. I like that Obama can talk with people to his left, to his right. He can talk to the wackos. He can find some common ground with them. And in the process, I believe Obama has an effect on the wackos to some extent.
Let's rephrase that. He has an effect on some wackos. Okay, because you can't paint it as an
effect all of them.
As an across-the-board effect. And I disagree with
Obama
on that because...
Look, people are unsavable. I accept that. Some people will always be hateful, evil, horrible people. I know that to be true. I accept that. I'm not that idealistic. But I am idealistic enough to think that we really can change some people's minds. And you know, and I guess I want to... God, they're going to think this is my gay agenda. But I peel them away. You know, start with the little old ladies. Start with the people who are of goodwill, who don't send $50,000 to a campaign, but, you know, maybe they truly believe being gay is a choice. They just haven't thought about it very much. Or maybe they really hadn't thought about the consequences of their church's position on birth control. I mean, I like to think that rather than rail against these people and cause them to hate us, that if we befriend them while not agreeing with them, we can persuade them.
I understand that position, but that position has historically been proven to be untenable and unmanageable and unsuccessful.
Okay, Lilo, no, I don't have more compassion for Rush Limbaugh. He's unsavable, I assure you.
I read an article about on the air about a week ago by a brilliant commentator named Tim Wise, who devotes his life to combating to being a white man who combats racism.
Okay.
And it was an article whose central premise was, what does it look like when fascism comes to America? And what do we do about it? And his premise was that every time we remain silent, every time we say, well, we can work with them, we enable it.
It must be confronted facially.
It must be confronted head on. And it must be rejected vociferously and plainly.
Bob, how
it's
about
it's time to start calling fascists fascists.
I'd rather say, and again, I Obama's my model here, right? I mean, when his
shall we talk about Paul von Hindenburg?
What's that?
Shall we talk about the people who said, well, you know, we'll control Hitler?
Bob, there is a difference between the 80-year-old lady with the rosary and Hitler. Come on.
I didn't say that Hitler was like the 80-year-old lady with the rosary.
But the point is that, yes, I'm not going to defend Rush Limbaugh. I'm not going to defend Hitler. I'm not going to defend the Ku Klux Klan. But I am going to say, of the little old lady with her rosary, that I'm not saying be silent. I'm not saying be silent.
I'm saying
don't shun her. Don't mock her.
Oh, I'm not shunning her. I'm going to tell her plainly that she is dead wrong.
Well, how about instead of telling her that she's dead wrong, how about approaching her and saying, you know, have you ever thought about it this way? And you're expressing your view, you're not backing down, but at the same time...
You lose, because she's going to go back into a 2,000-year-old organization that's going to say that you're a heathen son of the devil.
I know they are, and they've done it for 2,000 years, and they've also murdered a lot of people. I know that, but we have to break these things lightly. I think that it's an approach, it's a tone. I agree with your goals, Bob. But I think we can approach people with a certain tone that doesn't say immediately, I hate you, you hate me, I'm blue state, you're red state, go to hell. And you tell me to go to hell, and we're done. I don't think that achieves anything.
That's the whole point. Nothing is going to be achieved by these thugs, Mark.
But they're not all thugs. There are levels of thugs. There's that sliding scale that you have you mocked me for. But I
haven't mocked you. I've rejected it.
Thugginess. There are levels of thugginess. That's what I'm trying to say, and I want to go at the lighter end of the
bus. But you know, you just
start with them.
The faith that I was raised in, and the one that you still participate in, places a great deal of value and importance on repentance.
Yes.
Am I correct?
Yes.
You just passed a holiday that was rather intimately wrapped up with that notion.
Certainly true.
Now, you're not going to get anywhere with this crowd until they repent, because you and I both understand the value of it.
But, Bob, that happens. You know, I don't know if you've ever read those newspaper articles. I find them fascinating, where they show, for example, in the 1960s, and they show some 18-year-old, and they have a photo, a black-and-white photo, of this extremely angry woman who's screaming at the poor black kid trying to go to school, and she looks pure evil. And then 40 years later, they interview the woman, and she's now 60 years old, and she says, I can't even believe that was me. You know, I can't even believe I was acting that way. I don't know what I was thinking, but I'm so sorry. I'm not the person I was then. There is salvation. It's not the kind of it's not religious salvation. It's you know, human salvation. People can repent from their intolerance.
Right, but what I'm telling you is you are not going to see any institutional repentance from the Southern Baptist Church. You're not going to look for institutional repentance from the Latter-day Saints. You're not going to find it in the Roman Catholic Church.
Bob, there has been some small institutional repentance from even the Roman Catholic Church. I mean, John the 23rd, Vatican II, I see it. No, it didn't go far enough, but it was.
And John Paul,
the 2000-year-old institution,
and John Paul the, and John Paul II, and this old anti-aircraft gunner, the Benny the Rat, is rolling back John the 23rd's Vatican II as quickly as they possibly can. They're doing.
Not gone yet.
They're actively involved in it. That's why the College of Cardinals has been packed like a tin of sardines, rotten sardines at that. But now, I don't expect you to have this much understanding of this particular movement. But higher up in that Crooks and Liars post from which we're working here, there is reference to Howard F. Amundson and R.J. Rush Dooney. Do you know who they are?
I know who Amundson is because he's a Californian and he's. I know his work. I don't know the second guy.
Well, Amundson is a disciple of R.J. Rush Dooney. And R.J. Rush Dooney is the acknowledged father of the Christian Reconstructionist movement. And the Christian Reconstructionist movement is its stated goal is to destroy the Constitution of the United States and set up a biblical theocracy based on your half of the book. You know, where we stone people at the death at the city gates.
Bob, here's my point. And I think you get it. I mean, I think we just disagree on it. There are people that are actively trying to move this country backward, like the people you mentioned, okay? And the other examples, Ku Klux Klan, the current Mormon Church, the Southern Baptist, Jerry Falwell, all of them. And then there are people on the fringes of their movement who, you know, might give them a few bucks from time to time, but aren't the leaders of the movement, aren't they're the fellow travelers, they're the people who really don't know much about it and are just sort of doing what their parents
cannon
did.
Cannon fodder in the culture wars.
Fine. I think those people are savable. I think if you look just at gay rights and you look at the fact, this is an astonishing statistic for me, and I need to find the exact statistic because right now it's just a memory, so I may get it slightly wrong. But they did the polls of young people in California on this bill. And not surprisingly, some 75% of young people under 30 thought that gay people should have equal rights. Okay, that didn't astonish me. And the elderly people thought they shouldn't. That didn't astonish me. What astonished me is they broke down the young people. You know, Jews were very supportive, no surprise there. Catholics were pretty supportive, maybe some surprise, but not that much. Again, among young people. Here's the shocking statistic for me. 36% of all evangelicals under 30 support marriage equality for gay people. That, to me, was astonishingly high. One out of third, now the young people, not all evangelicals, but one out of three of evangelicals under 30 supported even marriage equality for gay people. That tells me there's some hope.
That hope will obtain if they get out of their churches. The longer they stay, the more hateful.
They're still proclaimed evangelical.
Yeah, they are, but the longer they stay, the more hateful they'll become. Because you can't get away from your tormentor. It's the Stockholm syndrome brought to life in a religious context.
And how do we get them out of their churches? I don't think insulting them and calling them awful names gets them out of their churches. It's like a cult, right? You got the people that join the Moonies, and they don't know the danger they're doing to themselves. But if you attack them up front, or Scientology, or any other ones, all they do is they retreat further in. It seems to
no,
me
I'm not talking about Mark. I'm not talking about attacking
love your enemies, if you will.
I'm not talking about attacking anyone. But these are the people who come up and get in our faces.
Yes, they do.
And when they do, we tell them without blushing.
And
you know,
should.
Like that dumbass pharmacist I confronted last week. I keep telling that story. You know, I'm standing at the counter,
people.
And he tells me, "Well, we can't have. You don't want socialism, do you?" And I looked at him and I said, "Fine by me." I'd rather have socialism than no medicine at all.
Even that, I would say to him, instead of fine by me, storm out. For me, if it were me, honestly.
I didn't storm out. I sat there and blistered him.
Well, see, I wouldn't have blistered him. What I would have done, and some of this is personalities, I would have said, do you hate Social Security? Because most people don't. Maybe he does.
Well, I did that. I said, hey, you're driving on socialized roads. You're drinking socialized water. You're protected by socialized cops. The socialized fire department comes and puts your house out if it catches.
I've told this story on air before. Quick side point. I live in an old colonial area, Alexandria, Virginia. And on the homes, there are plaques with fire companies on them. And that was a time before there was socialized fire extinguishing things. And what they would do is, if you paid your insurance and your house started burning, and your house started burning down, they would of course come out and put out the fire. But if your neighbors did not pay their insurance and their house was burning down, what they do is they let your neighbor's house burn down, but then they would spray the common wall to protect your house. And that is, you know, the way it used to be.
Free market, baby.
Free market.
Sure thing. Well, I appreciate this chance just to continue the discussion, because it was a lot of fun yesterday, and it's fun today.
I know that we're that different. I think some of it is tone, more than goals, you know, tactics rather than strategy. It's interesting to me. Maybe it's because I grew up as, you know, a Jewish kid in Nashville, Tennessee, you know, a gay kid in a straight world, and I'm used to talking to people who radically disagree with me. And I try, until they cross the line, and maybe my line's different from where your line is, but I try to use polite argument to let them see the error of their ways rather than calling them fascists.
Well, let's end this so you can hit a couple of other issues before the show finishes. Let's end this with the audio of that video that you were referencing.
Please do.
This is what little old ladies going to fundamentalist churches have funded in California.
Play it.
By the way, as California goes, so goes the rest of the nation.
God, as California goes, so goes the nation. A confrontation between light and darkness will happen this November.
How do you like that, Mark? You're darkness.
Yeah, kind of sounds like the beginning of a wrestling match.
It sounds like some other things that I'd just as soon not mention, but you're obviously on the side of darkness in these people's eye. And so am
I. Satan, I believe.
Yeah, the guy with the cloven hooves and the horns and the pitchfork. And
exactly.
That one. Yeah.
Yeah.
A battle to save the very sanctity of marriage. To the victor goes the soul of the nation. Cry out to God for the deliverance of the homosexual, for the salvation of their lives, for the love of God to be poured out over their hearts. Where there is no hope, where there is no human remedy, God still has a holy prescription. We are calling the whole nation to 40 days of prayer and fasting for California, culminating in a day of humility, cleansing, a day of battle like no other.
Battle, Mark. They don't want to negotiate with you. They want to battle you.
They're going to deliver me. Deliverance.
No, they're battling. They're battling. And by the way, during that previous babble about God has a prescription and all that, the video on it is showing nothing but images of San Francisco and then a long view of grass and then a bright white light like a nuclear flash.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're doing battle with us, and we want to negotiate with them.
You know what? You don't need to see any more of it, Bob.
Sick of it? Sick of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's all the same. I saw it. I saw the full clip. I think the listeners get the point. Yeah, it is Armageddon. It is the battle between good and evil. And, yes, gay people are the devil. And this is the kind of thing, let's face it, that leads to mass murder. I mean, that's where it comes. That's where it goes.
I'm glad you recognize that. Well, I'll leave you the rest of your program. Thank you, Mark.
And I'll do that.
And a very happy weekend to you.
Well, thank you very much. Let me go back, though, because I want to talk about a few other things, specifically about Sarah Palin. By now, you know that our hockey mom apparently has some expensive tastes. Now, I don't know any hockey mask that costs $150,000, but my guess is that wasn't what she was buying at Neiman Marcus and Saks Fifth Avenue and all those stores that I don't think exist in Wasilla, Alaska. Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. But by now, it's interesting because a story that was really just on Politico, you know, one of those liberal lefty websites, is now all over CBS, ABC, NBC. Heck, I wouldn't be surprised. Even Fox Propaganda Channel was mentioning it. And I think it's largely because not just she spent the money, but where it came from. You know, when Cindy McCain spent, and I'm not making this figure up, $313,000 on a single ensemble, that would be dress, pearls, and diamond earring, nobody said peep, and I understand why. The woman is worth $100 million. She's got plenty of money to waste and throw around. After all, she did incredibly well during the Bush years, right? fact, calculations will show that if you have $100 million, and that's apparently what her net worth is, not based on anything she did, of course, but based on her father's beer sales, you made about $10 million over the Bush years. So she's got $10 million to throw around. And, you know, other Americans lose a lot of money. She's got stuff to throw around. And John McCain would help her with her tax plans. But in any case, nobody complains about that. But Sarah Palin took her $150,000 from the Republican Party, specifically from the Republican National Committee, which I should say spent $13,000 in September alone on makeup. On makeup. Now, you know, I'm not a woman. I don't wear makeup. But $13,000? I mean, I'm sure lipstick is expensive these days. But $13,000? I mean, maybe she uses two lipsticks, three in a month, and then okay, you got some face things. If she needs that much makeup, she must look like a corpse. I mean, underneath there must just be rotting flesh. If it takes $13,000 of makeup to make her look that good, and this is really fun because you know they've been talking Joe Sixpack. Of course, Joe the plumber turns out is Sam the non-plumber who isn't making $250,000 and isn't trying to buy his business and owes back taxes. But Joe the plumber, that's their theme. See, John McCain didn't talk about the middle class in the first debate, didn't talk about the middle class in the second debate. And his advisors hit him hard and said, you've got to talk about the middle class. And so that's where Joe the plumber came from. Now, I've had some people write me and assure me that Joe the plumber is a Republican operative, and it is true he's not a registered independent. He is a registered Republican. But whether he's paid by the John McCain campaign or not isn't the point. The point is, well, he's a fraud. Because if he really were a plumber, he wouldn't be making $250,000 a year. He would do better under Obama. And guess what? He actually would. My point is this. When you mix the Joe the plumber, Joe Sixpack, hockey mom, all that kind of stuff with Sarah Palin, and then you find out that she's taken $150,000 in donors' money and spending it on God knows what. Well, people are starting to get angry. Interesting. Republican donors are being hit up a lot because, let's face it, Barack Obama has a huge monetary advantage for the fascinating reason that even though his average donation is just $25, he is getting donations from some 2-3 million people. 1% of Americans have given to political campaigns. That's unheard of. And even though John McCain gets his donations in, you know, $2,000 slots from all the telecommunications companies and oil companies and all the others that he would transfer your tax dollars to, it just ain't enough. So they're appealing to these Republican donors. I guess the Mormon Church isn't funding McCain. They're funding the anti-gay amendment in California. I guess one of the advantages of Mitt Romney, had he been running, is they would have put their money there instead of in persecuting gay people. But the donors are getting mad. The McCain campaign needs money, and they're spending it all on Sarah Palin's makeup and clothing. And it just doesn't seem very small town. My guess is that Palin had to leave real America in order to get some of those clothes, given that, in her view, the only real America is small towns. But she has a defender. She has people going out to bat for her, insisting that all her criticism of her is invalid. And one of those defenders is none other than Newt Gingrich. Yes, good old Newt came on the air to say that Saturday Night Live and others were being libelous when talking about Sarah Palin. Bob, you got that clip? Bob? I think
on the way.
Clip. All right, so we'll play it in a second. I want you to hear Newt Gingrich because – to me, this just shows how clueless they are. They don't understand the difference.
What do you make of CNN's reporter getting it really wrong and so insultingly wrong? And we haven't seen an apology yet to Governor Palin, but what do you think about it?
Well, I think the elite media's attack on Governor Palin again and again has been factually wrong, intellectually dishonest, totally biased, worthy of the Polish state news media attacking Lech Walesa back in the 1980s. I mean, this is a kind of deliberate, vicious, dishonest, total distortion of who Governor Palin is, including, by the way, the Saturday Night Live skits, some of which I think were slander and were worthy of a lawsuit. You know, should Saturday Night Live apologize for the viciously dishonest and mean-spirited skits they did, particularly about Todd Palin and his daughters, things that I think were slanderous and worthy of a lawsuit?
Viciously dishonest and mean-spirited. Like the Polish government. Really? I think I've seen every Saturday Night Live skip there's been. I don't remember one about Todd Palin and the daughters. Bob, do you remember one about Todd Palin and the daughters? I don't. I mean, I know that when they...
Oh, yeah. I know what he's talking about.
Okay, what's he talking about? Help me out.
It was a send-up of a press conference that was making fun of the New York Times, Mark. It wasn't making fun of the Palins.
I don't even remember.
They had a bunch of latte sipping, you know, the typical parody of New York Times
of
writers.
Liberal.
Yeah, liberals, the liberal media getting sent to Alaska, and one of them said, "Well, I'll do a story on Todd. You know, he's doing those daughters. I mean, after all, it's Alaska."
Oh, okay, I didn't see that one.
So that's
but you're right. What that is actually a parody of the New York liberal. It's a parody of the media giving a parody of Palin.
Right.
I guess that's too sophisticated for someone as simple as Newt.
Well, people fascinated by wheelbarrows, you know.
Well, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when the New Yorker tried to be all sophisticated and they had Obama and Michelle doing the terrorist fist jab with each other and wearing the clothing. It's that's just silly. You know, what's interesting is that if it was so offensive, Newt, then why did Sarah Palin herself go on Saturday Night Live and, you know, bust a move up there with the dancing moose that were shot? I mean, it's when you start to have to criticize cartoons, that's when you know that you're really off the rocker. I felt the same about the Muslims, you know, who, oh, no, the Danes had a cartoon of Muhammad. Let's kill a bunch of Danes. That's how I feel about you, Newt Gingrich. It's satire. It's satire. When Al Gore saw Saturday Night Live make him sigh too much, you know, he laughed, and I'm sure it hurt a little, but he moved on. The sad thing is not the satire of Sarah Palin. The sad thing is the truth. I mean, this is a woman who regularly abuses power. Don't take my word for it. Take the word of the Republican Alaskan legislature that found unanimously she broke the law and abused her power. Now, that hasn't, to me, gotten a lot of press play. Frankly, they've talked more about her $150,000 spending spree than I've heard about her breaking the law and abusing power in Alaska, which should lead to impeachment. Do most Americans realize that, yes, she was for the Bridge to Nowhere before she was against it? That when she said thanks but no thanks to Congress, what she actually said was thanks. I'll keep the money. I may not use it for the bridge. I'll use it for something else, and no, I won't give it back. I mean, the woman who talks about earmarks and spending, Alaska gets more earmarks. It never, never fails to bear repeating. Gets more earmarks per capita than any other state in the United States of America. She is the queen of earmarks. Indeed, Alaska, Miss, I say Barack Obama is a socialist. Alaska is the most socialist state in the United States. They do something that I support. They tax oil companies and they give all the revenues to the Alaskans. Now, this happened long before Palin came, but I support that. But that is socialism. And in addition to that, one of the reasons why Alaskans pay very little taxes is that we subsidize them. In a socialist redistribution of spreading the wealth around the United States of America, we federal taxpayers give hundreds of millions of dollars to Alaska that they don't pay back. They are, if you will, our colony. They live on our teat. They take everything from us and they don't give it back. You know, I can think of other states that could use it. I think Bob's state, West Virginia, can do it. Mississippi could use the money, not Alaska. But with that, my time is up. I will see you next week, 1 week till Election Day. This is Mark Levine, signing off.